From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. On September 11th, just minutes after the first plane struck the World Trade Center, the airspace over the United States was closed. All planes were ordered to land at the nearest available airport, wherever that was. Dozens of aircraft from all over the world touched down in Gander, Newfoundland. Finally, when it became clear they wouldn't be leaving anytime soon, the passengers stepped onto the tarmac in Gander and into the welcoming arms of strangers. 3.5 months later, many of them look back fondly on the days they spent on the Canadian island. NPR's Jackie Northam reports.
The sun was just brushing the horizon on the morning of September 12th, a day after the terrorist attacks, when Anne Keane walked through the door of the American Airlines plane. The freelance writer from Bethesda, Maryland, had boarded the craft in London more than 20 hours earlier before being diverted to Gander, a remote town of 10,000 people in the heart of Newfoundland.
There were hundreds of people waiting for us, and they had made sandwiches for us and pizzas, and we were all starving. And then we got on the bus. We didn't even know where we were. We just looked out the windows and saw no houses. It was in the woods. No buildings, no skyscrapers, cabins, and lakes. It was clearly a wilderness that we landed in.
Keane ended up in Glenwood. Narrow dirt roads wind around the bungalows, small forests, and a lake in this town of 1,000 people. Hundreds of stranded passengers filled the red brick school's classrooms and gymnasium. About the time that Keane was staking out a place on the kindergarten floor, Dr. Peter Jensen, a heart surgeon from Springfield, Illinois, was on a bus headed towards Gambo. More than 1,000 unexpected guests had already descended on this village of 2,800 by the time Jensen arrived.
We were accommodated in the Salvation Army. Those of us who did not have the padded bench were given blankets, and they brought army cots for us. Those squeaked considerably. They made a kind of a whoopee cushion sound. Initially, I think people were trying to find ways they could leave. Very quickly, it was obvious that we were in Newfoundland. That was a long ways by land from anything. So driving was a remote possibility. Flying was not possible. Once the options were limited, people were very cooperative and people got along very well, and I think a large part of it was due to how hospitable the Canadian people were in Newfoundland. It would not have been easy to be anything other than pleasant back.
We ended up with 38 planes and 6,600 passengers and crew. But at that time, we didn't know if it was going to be one day, 5 days, or what it was.
Claude Elliott is the mayor of Gander.
And it was a challenge for us. It was saying, now, here's an opportunity. Here's a group of people, under difficult circumstances, needs a lot of understanding. And I think people just came out and said, look, let's help those people. Let's make them comfortable. They're our guests. We went on the local radio station and the local television station and just asked the people if they had any sleeping bags or mattresses. And within 2 hours, we had enough bedclothes for everybody to have a blanket and a pillow.
The local Salvation Army organized housing for the stranded passengers. Major Ron Stuckless helped head that effort.
When all of this started to happen, they wanted every craft together because of they didn't know how soon they were going to need them as a group to go back on the craft. The other thing is we didn't really know who were on those planes. So people were saying, keep them together. But now when people got in and got settled away in the schools and then started to walk around town, then friendships started to develop.
You could see them at 7 a.m. in the morning walking the roads there, you know, lost, wondering what to be doing.
Like many residents, Shirley Dyke dropped everything to help the stranded passengers. That's how she met Dr. Peter Jensen.
Shirley Dyke was the person who found me, I guess, walking the streets the day we arrived, or a few days after the disaster at the Trade Center, asked if I needed anything, a meal or a nap or a change of clothes or a bath or a shower or anything. And after decades of my mother saying don't take candy from strangers, it was a hard habit to break. But in Gambo, we broke it successfully. Shirley loaded me in her truck, and I used her shower and was able to see the images on her television for the first time.
Oh, God, I can see his face now. He was so shocked. I wished after that I didn't let him watch it because he was really shocked. He hardly said a word after. He was just sitting there. I had to leave, go back to work, so I left him here in the house. I came back because then I went down. I met a few more people. I took five more in. They stayed from that on anyway till the day they left.
This was the brain of the whole operation in here. This is where people came to fax machine was there. The intercom was here. Phone calls are coming in constantly.
Bill Bradbury is a school teacher at the Lakewood Academy, a middle school in Glenwood. Bradbury says the passengers were desperate to get in touch with their families.
I think after everybody was able to make contact with families and their anxiety level started to come down a little and people started to unwind, and we had people from all walks of life and they came together and everybody was the same, and so, you know, they kind of had a little bit of fun after they were able to relax.
Ann Keene, who had been on vacation in Europe, says the residents went out of their way to show the stranded passengers the local sites.
There were some men who were river guides who, once you realized you were going to be there for a while, they would take off and go do a tour down the river, because at that time it was fairly warm and you could do that during the day. Right beside the school there was this pub called the Moosehead Lounge, and we would go over there and people danced, and the Canadian people would make covered dishes and put them out over there like hors d'oeuvres. It was a cocktail party every night. And these people are not wealthy people, clearly, but they would all come in with anything they had to offer. I mean, they just absolutely rolled out the red carpet for us.
We were right next to a small grocery store. I got to know the people who worked in the store fairly well. One woman was named Rhonda.
Passenger Peter Jensen got to know Rhonda Rosel.
Pete would come into the store and he would always speak to me every time he came into the store. And I was feeling like I should go and bring someone home. So I told him I came down to see if anybody wanted to come to my place to shower or do laundry, have supper and relax.
So three of us went over to her home, which she shared with her sister who lived upstairs. We all had our fill of chicken, and then Tracy and Rhonda brought out a bottle of mousse and insisted we share mousse with them.
And I took out a bottle of mousse. Well, needless to say, I didn't know who was going to pass out first. The boys wouldn't try mousse at all. And I said, come on, no, they wouldn't try it.
Some guests gave back to the Newfoundland community. School teacher Bill Bradbury was touched by one of the passengers' gifts.
Now, if you look at this picture on the wall here, this is from Clemence Brielle, and he's the official artist for the Salt Lake City Games this year. And he sent this back in appreciation. He was here. He stayed with us. Quite an eccentric character. He actually painted an original on the blackboard in one of the classrooms. And so this day, he came out. He said, I've done it. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he dropped these pastels on the floor. He said, come with me. And I followed him. And we went down to the grade 6 classroom. He said, voila. And it was magnificent. It was a painting that he had done on the chalkboard. And I said, it's just beautiful. And he said, the only thing in return, he said, may I use the staff washroom? So I said, certainly. But anyways, we cut out the chalkboard, and we're going to have that one framed.
Ann Keene says many of the passengers also reached out to help each other.
We would put blankets out at night, and we talked a lot about our families and people that we left behind at home. And this is one thing I will always remember. When you live in a metropolitan city, you can't see the stars. And I have never seen such a beautiful sky. And the stars were just so bright. And I mean, this sounds kumbaya, whatever you want to call it. And it just, there couldn't have been a better place to be.
4 days later, on September 15th, many airports in the United States had reopened and the passengers began to leave.
That evening when we finally said farewell and they boarded that bus there around midnight to go back to their planes, a lot of people were very sad to see them each other go, and there's lots of phone numbers exchanged and email addresses and home addresses, etc.
Bill Bradbury and Shirley Dyke say seeing the passengers off was very emotional.
We all cried. It was heartbreaking. glad to see them that they know they were going back home to their family and loved ones, but it was hard to see them leave too, because it was quite nice having them there and nice getting to know so many different people from all over the world.
The first couple of days that everybody was gone, it was like something was missing. God, it's so quiet.
The transition back to normal was difficult for many of the residents of Gander, including Rhonda Rosell and Salvation Army Major Ron Stuckless.
It didn't hit me until everybody was back on the plane, and I finally got a chance to go home and relax and say, wow, we've just looked after 7,000 people.
More than 3 months later, the experience of those 4 days in September lingers for both the residents of Newfoundland and their unexpected guests. Ann Keene is now back home in suburban Washington.
Let's see, there's a friend here who lives in Washington, and then several women up in New York, and we've just emailed and corresponded, and we just have this common experience that we can always go back to, and it all kind of changes as the months pass. You keep in touch, but you just see how they're adjusting.
Dr. Peter Jensen is back with his patients.
It's some of the memories I've had of the people in Gambo, the local Salvation Army band playing their accordions and guitars for us at night, and the camaraderie of the crowd, of the people on the plane, as well as the people in the community. That stands out in my mind.
Rhonda Rosell.
One day I went to the mail, right surprised, and I had this lovely care package, and it was some souvenirs from a bathroom, and a card, and a picture of all of us sat around the table. So that was, it was beautiful.
Teacher Bill Bradbury.
I have received phone calls and numerous emails and from people, friends that I've met. This was written by a gentleman in his mid-70s, I would say. Only once was I treated in a similar way. This was when, as a child, I was liberated in Holland in 1945. You wonderful Canadians have not changed. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Gander Mayor Claude Elliott.
Some days I'm sitting there doing something, the phone rings, I pick up. It's the air traffic controller saying American Airlines Flight 45 is passing overhead, and they want to call them and say hello to the mayor and say thank you to the people in the community. We're still getting that, we're just here hoping that nothing of this magnitude ever happens in this world again. But if it do, we're here.
And Mayor Elliott says they'd do it all over again. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Gander, Newfoundland.